your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dream. The one they picked, the one you know by.
Welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, with your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. This program will give parents and educators the skills and methods to effectively advocate for children today. And now, here's Rich and Michelle.
Hello, everyone. This is Rich Weinfeld, and welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education.
And I'm Rich's co-host, Michelle Davis, and our show is dedicated to exploring all the issues in education that affect children across our nation and across the world. And we believe that with high expectations and an education system that works, all children can achieve. And we're talking about hot topics in education. Today's topic is technology, and Rich will tell us a little bit about that in just a minute. But our overall show and how technology fits into our overall show relates to whether we can make a difference in our education system and really produce students who are future leaders and can contribute to our nation. And Rich, what are we talking about today? Why don't you tell our listeners of our show description?
We're extremely excited about today's show. We have with us Ray Kurzweil, who we'll talk more about in a minute. Let me just set the stage for today's show by doing a little history. In the 1950s, IBM's Thomas Watson predicted there would be use for perhaps 5 computers in the world. Presently, billions of people, of course, use personal computers, and the explosion of technology seems endless. But are schools keeping up? In the February 17th Washington Post, Howard Gardner wrote about the need to transform education as the times change, about the need to preserve literacy skills yet prepare students for a new age of literacy that's dominated by new forms of technology. We want to talk about how should our schools be preparing students for this world? How can technology remove barriers to learning faced by many of our students? What is the impact of new types of assistive technology designed for special education? And how might that technology benefit all students? Ray Kurzweil, today's guest, is one of the most brilliant inventors, authors, and futurists of our times. His reading technology is revolutionizing teaching in the same way his synthesizer impacted music. He'll talk about the future that he envisions for our students and how we can prepare them for that future today. In this timely topic, we'll explore challenges and benefits of technology in the classroom, the use of assistive technology for students with special needs in all phases of their lives. So we're extremely excited about that. And, Michelle, before we focus more on technology and looking in hot topics this week, I was struck by a story that at first glance doesn't relate directly to education, but I'll quickly explain how it does. Papers all over the country reported the passing of Robert Rauschenberg, and I have here the front page of the Washington Post. Robert Rauschenberg was one of the most widely influential artists of the past half century. His work erased the borders separating painting, sculpture, and printmaking. He died at the age of 82 this week. And that caught my eye. I mean, I love art and caught my eye for that reason, but even more so because I know that Robert Rauschenberg talked openly about his dyslexia. And I've been fascinated by the connection between dyslexia and creative minds, and Robert Rauschenberg was a great example of this. His youthful dyslexia was so severe that he had a famous quote about that he said he excelled in poor grades. He came to my attention. There's a wonderful film that I use for training that I've mentioned on air before called Ennis's Gift. And the Ennis is Bill Cosby's son, who was one of these twice exceptional kids who was tragically murdered at a very young age. The film was made in a tribute to Ennis and features many famous people talking about their own battles with dyslexia and own learning issues. And Robert Rauschenberg is featured, and I love this quote from him as he came to understand his own dyslexia and was able to go back and talk to his family about it. Here's his quote from the film. He says, "It was only recently that my own mother said to me, 'Isn't that something? We just thought you were stupid.'"
Mm.
So, you know, the power of, you know, how obviously that could feel to be thought of in your own family as stupid when obviously you're a creative genius. And you know, again, so many folks have both the gifts and the challenge of dyslexia.
We hear about that all the time, and our guest Jonathan Mooney shared the same thing. We really have a lot of hope for people with all different types of different needs, and I'm also really interested in your interest of dyslexics who are artistically and otherwise very, very gifted, twice exceptional, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Now, I want to mention next week's show we'll have one such person, Samantha A. Beale, who is a wonderful poet, has written a beautiful book of her poetry called Reach for the Moon, which was actually published when she was 13 years old. She will be on the show talking about her own experiences as a student who was twice exceptional, as a student who was brilliant on the one hand and struggled with math and areas of spelling and other rote memory. And she'll be joined by her mother, who will talk about her perceptions of that journey and how she had to stand up for Samantha to get her what she needed in the school environment. So we're looking forward to that show next week.
And also, I think it's important to mention, on May 30th, we'll be having a show on the many faces of giftedness, and we'll be continuing to explore twice exceptionality, meaning gifts and talents, and also special needs or learning needs. And we'll be continuing this theme all the way through our show.
Sounds great. Do you have another hot topic for us?
Yeah, I love the technology theme that we have this week. And there's a lot of debate going on out there in terms of whether technology is really serving kids in the classroom, how technology can be used. And I'll start out by sharing that the Education Week published May 7th. There's a headline written by Andrew Trotter, "Online Education Cast as Disruptive Innovation." And this article talks about the public education overhaul in terms of the use of technology and how some organizations and administration in school systems are really seeing this as very disruptive. It's threatening how schools function and how schools might function. And on the other hand, we've got an article that talks about the advantage of parents being able to use technology to further monitor and more closely monitor how their kids are doing. In the New York Times, May 4th, there was an article entitled, "I Know What You Did Last Math Class," and you can't see it on the air, but there's a picture of a parent looking through binoculars at her student's class. And this is analogous to the video camera in the teddy bear with monitoring of babysitters. And so I think there's a lot of pros and cons, and I'm hopeful that today Ray can shed his views on whether this is really as a disruptive innovation or a way for powerful partnerships and, you know, better learning for students.
I wonder what, can you elaborate more on what the objections are from folks to online? I can imagine that, but what did the article talk about?
It says that there's an article, "Disrupting Class, How Disruptive Innovation Will Change the Way the World Learns," predicts that the growth in computer-based delivery of education will accelerate swiftly. And this book talks about how this will disrupt our education system, how the schools are so structured at the present time that they're just not going to be able to come along with the education through technology. And that's the fear. There's a quotation, "Even the best managers in the world, if they were the heads of departments and schools and the administrators of schools, could not do it," meaning advanced school systems like technology needs to be advanced there.
Yeah, it sounds to me, you know, it's more of a fear of change and of knowing how to incorporate the change than really talking about anything being bad in itself of the technology.
I think you're probably on target about that, and of course we'll be able to hear much more about that. I have another article that talks about how, you know, there was a poll taken. This is, again, Education Week. 3 out of 4 parents in the online poll agreed that knowing how to use digital media benefits children, but the large majority of parents said that they didn't think that the web or any technology helped their children learn how to communicate or work with others or to be responsible human beings.
Very interesting. I have a few articles also that I came across, and again, I want to thank our reporter from TUI newsletter, Mark Beatty, for gathering articles for us. And one of the articles that he provided talks about technology-rich classrooms render textbooks useless. And this was actually, it sounds negative, but it could be negative, but it's a very positive article from Kansas talking about technology-rich classrooms, some of which are supported by a grant from Kansas State Department of Education, are equipped with laptop computers, scanners, printers, digital cameras, smart boards, and just a lot of positive quotes from teachers and students about how those classrooms are transforming their learning, making learning more accessible and motivating students. Michelle, I want to go ahead and start introducing today's guest, because he's going to join us right after the first break, and we really want to maximize his time with us. Ray Kurzweil is an exceptional person who we're just very honored to have with us. He has been described as one of the top entrepreneurs in the United States. Forbes Incorporated called him the rightful heir to Thomas Edison, which is just, you know, an awesome tribute.
Wow.
He was included as one of the 16 revolutionaries who made America, along with inventors of the past two centuries, by PBS, so public broadcasting, when they thought of 16 revolutionaries over the past 200 years who created America, Ray Kurzweil was included. He's one of the leading inventors of our time. He was the principal developer of the CCD flatbed scanner, the first OmniFont optical character recognition, the first print-to-speech reading machine for the blind, which has now morphed into a reading machine that helps all students with learning disabilities, the first text-to-speech synthesizer, the first music synthesizer capable of recreating the grand piano, other orchestral and other orchestral instruments, as well as other inventions. He's been the recipient of numerous prizes, including MIT's largest prize for innovation, and written 5 books, which we'll talk more about after the break, and it'll be our honor to bring him on with us after the break. Be right back.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a price war among the major term life carriers. Consider these possible rates. A man age 45, non-tobacco user, could obtain $1 million of coverage for as little as $75 a month, and this rate is fixed for the next 10 years. We specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. A man age 50, non-tobacco user, may be able to obtain $500,000 of coverage for as little as $115 per month, and this rate is fixed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed not to change for 20 years. We have great rates for smokers too. For new or replacement term life insurance, call the Term Lifeline now. 800-890-5075. 800-890-5075. That's 800-890-5075.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators educators. Do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well with myself, Michelle Davis, and my co-host, Rich Weinfeld. And we're about to have the honor to speak with Ray Kurzweil, a futurist who is making a difference in all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Ray, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Look forward to sharing ideas.
It looks like Ray hasn't quite joined us yet. I'll say a little bit more about him and wait for him to join us. On Kurzweil, that's KURZWEILAI.net, you can see much of Ray's extraordinary writings, articles, books, summaries of the way that he envisions the future. And I'm struck by not only the setup of the website, but different features such as you can go to Ramona, who is an intelligent being online who attempts to chat with you. And that, to me, speaks to the interactive nature of the technology that Ray has allowed to be produced for so many children across the United States. I mean, I know that he's very well known for his contributions to music and other technologies. I'm really struck.
I'm online, but you can't hear me.
Oh, we're here. Ray, we hear you now. Ray?
Okay, I'm calling on another line.
You hear his voice, Michelle?
I do. Hi, Ray. This is Michelle and Rich.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much for being on with us today. We're very honored to have you on our show.
Yeah, look forward to sharing ideas.
Great. I was just sharing a little bit about KurzweilAI.net. I've been really exploring your site here and your articles. I guess the first question that I have is, what is the future that we should be preparing our kids for?
Well, one of my main themes is that the pace of technical change is accelerating, and in particular, information technology doubles its power every year. When I was a student at MIT, we all shared one computer, which took up a whole building. The computer in your cell phone today is a million times smaller, a million times less expensive, and 1,000 times more powerful. That's a billion-fold increase in price performance. We'll see another billion-fold increase in capability for the same cost over the next 25 years, while at the same time we shrink technology by a factor of 100,000 over that period of time. So computers are going to get smaller and smaller, more and more powerful. They're going to make their way into our clothing, ultimately into our bodies and brains. They're going to keep us healthier. Health and medicine is becoming an information technology, so we can actually reprogram this ancient software called genes that evolved thousands of years ago when conditions were quite different. So a lot of things are going to change. We're going to be spending more of our time in virtual reality environments where we can all get together as if we're in the same place, even if we're hundreds of miles apart. So there's lots of changes as these technologies grow exponentially.
Ray, I'm really struck by what you're saying. I mean, before you came on the air, I was sharing an article from Education Week that even just online education, which I think is a very, very simplistic version of what you're talking about, is cast as a, quote, disruptive innovation, just because schools are you know, traditionally as we're seeing them. The kids are sitting in the classrooms. It seems like there's a lot of resistance, or there could be a lot of resistance. What do you think that's all about, and how can we tackle that as a society?
Well, we do need to make changes in education. We have made some changes. If you look at the broad picture, we've been destroying jobs at the bottom of the skill ladder and adding new jobs at the top of the skill ladder, which are actually better jobs. They're more satisfying. They pay more. They pay six times as much in constant dollars as they do 100 years ago. We had 60,000 college students in 1870. We have 7 million today. We spend 10 times as much per capita on K through 12 education as we did 100 years ago. But the idea that we can just teach children a trade or profession and they'll just use those skills for the rest of their career is no longer valid. We have to teach kids really to have a passion for learning and to keep learning, because knowledge becomes obsolete very quickly. I'm presumably an expert in pattern recognition, but pattern recognition has morphed into 100 different fields, and it's hard to keep up with any one of them. The actual specific knowledge that people learn, by the time they graduate, is already obsolete. What they really need to learn is how to learn and how to find knowledge. And the best way to do that, particularly with children, is to actually get them engaged in projects that are creative. And the tools of creativity have been democratized. It used to be you had to be a big Hollywood movie, for example, to make a movie, big Hollywood movie or studio. Now, mm-hmm. You know, a kid in her dorm room with an HD camera and her laptop computer can create a very high-quality movie or a sound recording. A couple of kids at Stanford wrote some software that revolutionized web search and is worth $150 billion today, and you probably use to search the web. And so disruptive innovation can be created by anyone, and is being created by, you know, kids. Things like Facebook were created by a couple of Harvard students.
Mm-hmm.
And this type of technology is sought out by young people instinctively. If you have a mission like getting in touch with your peers or creating something, some creative expression that you want to put on YouTube, kids learn how to use the technology, and that's actually the best way to learn.
Ray, one thing what you're saying makes me think about is Michelle and I do a lot of advocacy work in schools, and when we go into schools, we still see kids being expected to memorize a large number of facts and be being tested on that. And, you know, when I hear you talk about the kind of jobs we're preparing them for, the kind of world they're going to live in, that kind of learning to me seems more obsolete. Would you agree with that? And
yeah, I agree with that. It is worthwhile learning the stories of history so people have some perspective and can understand current events in the historical context, but just memorizing a list of facts and a list of kings and queens that you know, precede each other is not going to give people a passion for learning, but learning the drama that is history is valid. But that can be done in the context of doing projects where, you know, a student might, let's say, reenact the Constitutional Congress, for example. And increasingly, things like virtual reality technology will enable us to actually do that, to get kids involved in the drama of history, or use technology to create creative creations in all of the fields, arts and sciences.
Ray, what do you think that'll actually look like? Will that be, you know, a student sitting at home in front of a very small computer with the types of things that we see in the movies, you know, where you put it over your eyes and you see a virtual world? Do you think that is what school would look like, or are we past that even in the, you know, not-so-distant future?
Well, personal computing is going to become very intimate. We have a dilemma today that, on the one hand, people like big HD screens, but they also like to watch movies on tiny devices like your iPod. We're going to solve that by putting displays in your glasses that beam images directly to your retina.
Wow.
One thing, it could create a virtual display that hovers in air, and there are displays that actually detect your head movement, so as you move your head, the dis- light doesn't move. But more significantly, it can overtake your whole visual field of view and put you in a full immersion visual auditory virtual reality environment. Or, the most interesting thing is to actually blend real and virtual reality and provide augmented reality. So you'll be online all the time. You'll see real reality, but it'll be blended with virtual reality. There'll be little pop-ups that guide you through the real world. You look at someone, there'll be a pop-up remind you it's their birthday next Tuesday. Remind you what their name is. That would be helpful.
What would the role of a teacher be in a classroom where students had that kind of technology available?
I think teachers are really mentors and guides to really interact with the child, find out where they are emotionally, get them engaged in projects. I really think the best way to learn and the way that I learn and continue to learn today is because I'm really focused on a project. The project is not I want to learn this material. The project is I want to, you know, create a cell phone that can read to the blind, but then we have to figure out, you know, something about image processing and learn, you know, the latest image processing techniques. And so we have a passion for learning because we're actually trying to accomplish something. So my kids now grown up, but as they were, you know, I would attend their classes, and you know, when they got most engaged, it's when they were doing a creative project and then had a passion to learn something because they needed that skill to actually accomplish the project, and they had a passion for getting the project done.
So the teacher is still going to be the guide, the person who creates interest and passion for subjects and who guides the kids, but we don't see them as the standing in front of a classroom, even virtually, and delivering information.
I'd say that's right. I mean, I think, you know, the teachers that I remember were mentors to me and collaborators and also made resources available. I think that's really the proper role of a teacher.
Well, you've done so much work in terms of the technologies that you've developed that Rich and I ask for and often get for students on a very regular basis. And before we go to break, which will just be in just a minute, and then we'll come back and we'll have some additional time with you, and we thank you for that. You know, I just wanted to say that I appreciate the contributions that you've made to people with special needs and the fact that you use your futuristic skills and thinking to serve people with special needs.
Well, thanks. I mean, that is really what's exciting about being an inventor. It's not just having a cool demo that you put on a table and show people, but to actually provide your technology to people and have it make a difference in their lives. I mean, that's really the goal for an inventor.
I think you've met that, certainly, and I know you have a lot more to go, and we'll talk to you again after our break. Hang on just a second, and we'll be right back with Ray Kurzweil.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough.
Did you know your child's asthma attacks can be triggered by things like shower curtains, a blanket, even a teddy bear?
I feel like I'm choking.
And there are many other things in your home and your child's classroom you may not know about. For the latest information, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Help prevent your child's asthma attacks and avoid the emergency room. Call toll-free 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Or visit www.noattacks.org.
I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Hi, I'm Rich Weinfeld with my co-host Michelle Davis, and our guest today is Ray Kurzweil. We want to also invite you to email us at specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. And we'll check for emails and entertain your phone calls in the fourth segment.
And Rich, don't we have a special prize for our first two callers today?
We do. We have a contribution from a technology expert in the Washington, D.C. area, and that's Joan Green, and she will provide copies of her book on technology, which is called Technology for Communication and Cognitive Treatment, The Clinician's Guide. And we'll give that to our first two callers today. Ray, I wanted to focus in this segment on some of the educational technology that you've developed. And first, I wanted to double check, are you back with us?
Yeah.
Okay, terrific. Technology is great when it's working, and I'm glad it's working. Ray, I discovered your work. I was Montgomery County, Maryland's Director of Programs for Gifted Kids with Disabilities. And when I came to the job, the challenge was, how are we going to teach these kids at the very high level that they're capable of learning, yet get them information in a way that's not impacted by their reading disabilities, which for many of them were very profound disabilities. And fortunately, located right in Montgomery County is a wonderful company called Envision Technology, and they were the representatives for the Kurzweil reading technology. And I quickly learned about that and was able to get cooperation from Montgomery County schools to get that technology into our programs, and now it's spreading throughout the state of Maryland, and I know other states as well. Could you talk to us a little bit about the Kurzweil reading technology? And,
sure.
Thank you.
In fact, it's a good example of the exponential growth in capability and exponential shrinking in size that I talked about earlier, because the first reading machine was the size of a washing machine.
Oh, is that right?
And it worked, but it had limitations.
And what year was that?
1976.
Okay.
So in February of this year, we've introduced the Kane FB Reader Mobile for the blind and the K Reader Mobile for dyslexic individuals, which is built into a cell phone. It's an ordinary cell phone, weighs 4 ounces, and a blind person or a dyslexic student just snaps a picture of any print in the real world. It could be a sign on a wall, a handout at a meeting, or a handout in class, a menu, a bank ATM display, or any electronic display, any print in the real world, and it then reads it out loud. And this, we just introduced actually 6 more languages. We also have working in our lab, and we'll be introducing soon language translation, so you can snap a picture of a Spanish document and have it read in English, or vice versa.
And where can our listeners find information about that?
We have a website, knfbreader.com.
K-N-F-B, as in boy?
Right, K-N-F-B, as in boy, reader.com.
And it's K-N-F, as in Frank, just to make sure we're hearing that right.
K as in Kurzweil, N as in Nancy, F as in Frank, B as in boy, reader.com.
Great.
And fits in your shirt pocket. With a screen reader software, you can also make all the other functions of the device available. It's a cell phone, it's a camera, you can access the web, send email, listen to MP3 files. But it's also a full-scale reading machine. And for dyslexic kids, in addition to reading it out loud, it also displays on the display of the cell phone what it's reading with synchronized highlighting. And we do have research that shows that synchronized visual display along with the auditory actually helps these kids develop reading skills.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Ray, is this a smaller version of the software that we're used to seeing in school systems, which the Kurzweil Reader, whatever version, is the most recent? Is this the same software, or is this slightly different?
We did introduce over a year ago a bigger version, which was a camera connected to a pocket computer. So that was a little bit bigger, weighed about a pound. Didn't quite fit in your shirt pocket. And that was the Kurzweil National Federation of the Blind Reader. So this replaces that. It's about five times smaller. It's just one unit. It's a 4-ounce cell phone. It's a Nokia N82 cell phone. And the software enables you to snap a picture of print and read it out loud with its synchronized display for dyslexic students.
Ray, some of the features that I've loved with the Kurzweil reading technology have been the ability to, when you come across a vocabulary word that you don't know the meaning of, you can click on that and hear the definition. When you're studying for a test, you can save a part of the reading right to that file. A teacher can insert notes into the file.
Right.
Pay attention. Things. I imagine those kind of things would not be in this, or would they?
Well, not on this little cell phone device. That is available in the Kurzweil 3000, and there'll be new versions of that software that runs on a PC. We do plan actually to integrate this cell phone device for dyslexics with a PC version, so they can capture a device with their cell phone when they're out during the day, and then transfer it to their PC and do the kinds of things that you're talking about, or take a PC document that they're scanning on the scanner and download it to their cell phone and read it on the bus. So these two different platforms will work seamlessly
together.
That's
great. That's
wonderful.
Great.
Wonderful.
I'm sure that school people listening, the number one question is, how much does it cost? And I know things vary depending on site licenses and how many applications, but could you talk a little bit about that?
It's $1,500. Cell phone now is under $500. So it's about $2,000 for the hardware and software. Mm-hmm.
And then the Kurzweil reading technology for the classroom, I know that it's possible to bring the price way down if you talk about applications that are shared among many users.
Yeah, I mean, there are packages available for schools to get things like site licenses and provide it to a whole group of students.
One of the biggest areas of need in the classroom, I think, is the area of written language. How are we doing with voice recognition and speech to text, and how are we doing with the area of written language software?
Well, speech recognition is coming along. It requires exponential growth in computers to make linear gains in speech recognition, but we're getting exponential growth in computers, as you know. And speech recognition is actually a lot better than people realize. The Kurzweil speech recognition was integrated with Dragon Dictate a number of years ago, and
I have it myself. Use it all the time.
And it's marketed under Dragon from Nuance. And Nuance actually used to be Kurzweil Computer Products. So the latest Dragon software from Nuance, which incorporates the original Kurzweil speech recognition, is the best on the market. And it's actually surprisingly good. It's continuous speech, unrestricted vocabulary, and the accuracy is quite good, and it's used by millions of people.
It scans your email program, all of the emails, all of the documents you've ever written, and develops a vocabulary based on your unique areas.
Yeah, that's one of the things it does, and it also adapts to your voice. You train it for a few minutes initially, but then it continues to learn as you use it. And it gets quite accurate very quickly.
It does.
Ray, I want to, I know teachers and parents listening, it's wonderful to hear about these accommodations and devices, and then we always come up against, well, do we keep teaching kids how to read and how to write without the technology? Or at what point does that not become our focus? And if we allow them to use technology, are we enabling them, giving them a crutch that's not going to help them to learn the traditional reading and writing? How do you balance
technology,
that?
Technology is part of our lives. It's not going away. And as you well know, kids use technology all the time. And I speak at a lot of different conferences, and whether it's a music conference, a library conference, a graphic arts conference, they all sound like computer conferences because everybody, both kids and adults, are using technology all the time to do everything. So we shouldn't be avoiding technology. It's part of our lives. I think technology can really help kids read. Another application of these reading machines is for the 4 million kids that enter school every year who don't read yet at their intellectual level just because they haven't learned yet. So, every four-year-old is reading disabled. You can read to a 4 or 5-year-old a very sophisticated story, but their reading skills are very primitive at that age. It's actually not until 4th or 5th grade, typically, that their reading skills catch up to their intellectual level.
Right.
So kids could actually learn from books on their own, from their own initiative, if they use this kind of reading technology, and that's something we're going to pursue as a market, to actually have kids who are not, labeled reading disabled. They're just normal kids, but their reading skills are below their intellectual level, which is normal, as I say, until like age 10. And they can then learn from reading assisted by the technology. And it will also actually help their reading skills because of the synchronized visual and auditory presentation. They'll see the print. Every word as it's spoken is highlighted in a synchronized fashion. That helps build their reading skills. So they'll learn to read while they're also learning from reading at their intellectual level. Kids don't want to just read, see Dick run. That's at least what I read when I was a kid. Maybe the books are different now, but it's still, a book for a first grader is that they're trying to read with their own reading skills is not at their intellectual level. And it's not of interest to them.
Ray, I wish we had more time with you because there's so many other areas that we'd love to get into, but we really want to thank you for being with us today. We encourage people to visit your website, to read some of your many books, including The Age of Spiritual Machines, When Computers Exceed Human Intelligence, Fantastic Voyage, Live Long Enough to Live Forever, and The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology.
Thank you, Ray, for your contributions to our society at large.
Well, thank you for having me on. I enjoyed the discussion.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
Take care. We'll be right back after the break.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it. So call us right now. 888-459-4825. 888-459-4825. 859-4825. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, call us now and see how we can help you. 888-459-4825. 888-459-4825. 888-459-4825. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. I'm Michelle Davis, and we're here with Rich Weinfeld, my co-host. And we've just heard from Ray Kurzweil, a brilliant futurist and inventor who has touched the lives of so many people, people in general and people with special needs. And what we were just talking about with Ray before he had to leave was, is there a trade-off? Should there be a trade-off between learning your, I guess we'll call them basic skills, reading and writing, for example, and then trading off with technology, or should that really be integrated? Rich, I think that part of what we experience as advocates is what Ray started to talk about. There's a gap between the knowledge that the teachers have in the classroom about technology and the knowledge that their students have.
I think, a gap between that, and also I don't know that teachers are really fully prepared for this world that Ray is describing, that we already are entering into and are going to be entering into more and more. The teacher as someone who not only knows about technology but knows how to facilitate and guide students to use it, doesn't see the use of technology as something that is a crutch or keeping kids away from the important learning of the facts
or a bonus
learning, right? Or the important learning of how to do the reading or do the writing. I mean, I was impressed that Ray really didn't advocate for not paying attention to learning to read or not paying attention to learning to write. What I heard is more of a balance between using the technology and still learning those skills.
He didn't see it as a trade-off. He sees technology as integrated into our lives.
That's what I heard loud and clear. And again, it kind of begs the question of are teachers, do they have the preparation in their teacher training programs, undergraduate, graduate, in-service training to really be the kind of classroom leaders that are needed?
Our listeners must have some comments about this or at least some thoughts about it. If you do have a question, thought, or comment about our topic today, you can certainly call 1-800-472-5792 or email us at specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. Our first two calls or emails today will win a book on technology by a national technology expert.
That's Joan Green, and the title of the book is Technology for Communication and Cognitive Treatment, The Clinician's Guide. And I know it's jam-packed with different technologies, descriptions of them, how to access them, where to find them. So it's a wonderful resource.
You know, we were talking about teacher training, and both you and I teach on the master's and doctoral level. And we've also trained hundreds, if not thousands, of teachers in our careers. And I'm seeing even at that level where people are getting their master's or doctoral degrees in the field of education that some adult students still don't exactly know how to attach a document to an email and email it. So I think we have a long way to go, but I'm quite excited about the possibilities and the future that Ray started to paint for us today.
I love hearing him talk about, you know, how far we've come in such a short time. You know, the first reading machine in 1976 being the size of a washing machine, and now it fitting into a cell phone. And you know, that is one of his themes in his books about the, you know, the accelerating exponential growth of technology. And you know, you can see it in the power of our laptops compared to the computers that. At least some of us can remember that used to fill large rooms, you know, and didn't have the same power.
You know, one of my concerns, and I guess we can start to also prepare the listeners about what our other show is upcoming. We've got some really exciting guests. But let's talk for a few minutes about what we see in the classroom. One of the concerns, Rich, that I was sharing with you is that I see technology attempting to be used in the classroom. Students are sitting in front of the computer on an individual basis wearing their headphones, and the computer's asking for responses. And a lot of times the students, because they just don't have the skills that the technology's asking for, just click yes, 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 or okay, okay, okay. The computer program collects data that may not be accurate. So I have a little concern about that. Do you see that as well?
I see that, and it also makes me think about, you know, just because something is on a computer doesn't mean it's innovative or, you know, or cutting-edge education. And we can put the same kind of rote information, the same kind of tests that we all hate that are just fact-based and don't call for any higher-order thinking. Those can be put on computers, and that doesn't make them cutting-edge. So I think that's something else to be aware of.
Absolutely. Hey, Rich, I want to remind the last minute, those of you who may be wanting to email specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. And I wanted to also share about our website, www.specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com, where you'll learn about mine and Rich's advocacy book called Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book, What You Can Do Now to Advocate for Your Exceptional Child's Education. It will also tell you more about this show and our upcoming guests, and also about our Advocacy Training Institute that we're very excited to start at the beginning of the 2008-2009 school year in October of 2008. So check us out at www.specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com.
You know, and that institute is going to be both for parents and teachers who just want to learn how to advocate more effectively for the kids in their life. And then it's also going to be a place for folks who want to do this on a professional level and really want to know all the ins and outs of being an effective advocate and want to go on to become a working advocate in the field. So it'll be an intensive weekend in the beginning of October, and as Michelle said, more details are available on our website. We're really looking forward to that.
I know that.
Go ahead,
Rich.
Oh, I just wanted to go ahead and in the few minutes we have left, preview next week, and if we still have time, talk about some upcoming shows after that. Next week is going to be two wonderful guests, Samantha Abiel and her mom, Betsy Abiel. Samantha was one of the twice exceptional students who we've been discussing, a brilliant young lady with great ideas who had severe problems with some of the rote information gathering and rote test taking. And her the impact of her disability was most felt in the areas of math, things like spelling, other kind of fact-based areas. She has written two books, which I find very important and very moving. The first I mentioned earlier, Reach for the Moon, is a collection of her poetry that was put together with an artist in her community through a partnership that was facilitated by her mom, Betsy A. Beale, and one of her exceptional teachers in her middle school. Then the other book, more recently, is called My 13th Winter, which tells the story of what it was like to go through that period, and both very vividly talks about the problems, the issues that she had, and also the wonderful triumphs that she had. So we'll hear from her at length. We'll hear from her mom at length, talking about, you know, how she advocated and supported Samantha. So it should be an exceptional show.
And I won't be with you, Rich, but I hope you'll ask her about the technology that she's found useful to use in the classroom and in her life in general.
I'll be sure to do that. And then I know that the week after that, you'll be on the air with a guest co-host, Jean Painter, who is the Director of Gifted Education for the state of Maryland, and you'll be talking with Joyce Van Tassel-Baska.
Thanks for joining us.
Who's the creator of the William & Mary Language Arts Program and other programs. Thanks. We'll see you all next week with Samantha and Betsy A. Beale, and we'll be back then. Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's edition of Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. Join your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis again next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Teach your children well, their father's health, it slowly goes.